This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars episode 107 was recorded on June 1st, 2020. I'm Eric Townsend. This episode of Macro Voices All-Stars is brought to you by TopTradersUnplugged.com, the leading podcast when it comes to quant and rules-based investing. I'll tell you how to claim a free copy of their new guide to the best investing books ever written at the end of this episode. Joining me today is Alhambra Investments Chief Investment Officer Jeffrey Snyder. Jeff prepared a slide deck, as usual, for today's podcast. You can find the download link in the description of this podcast on our homepage at macrovoices.com. Jeff, when we last got together at the end of April, you talked about the inflation prospects for the Fed's money printing. Now here we are on the first day of June, and you're back to talk about the inflation prospects of the Fed's money printing. So did you have a memory relapse? Have the facts changed and that's changed your opinion? What's going on here? Why the repeat?
Well, you know, we may be stomping over much of the same ground, but there's been several key developments that I think demand everyone's attention. The first part everyone knows, you know, as you just mentioned, the so-called money printing. That's the part that you can see. The second part, what we are not seeing in the bond markets is their response to it. Like prior episodes of the so-called money printing, the Fed's so-called stimulus, the bond market just isn't buying what the Fed is selling, and we need to be just as cautious. So despite this, you know, the hysteria reached a fever pitch a couple weeks ago when Jay Powell went on, you know, 60 Minutes and said the words, create money digitally. Now, that triggered a whole lot of the usual hand-wringing and concerns about, you know, hyperinflation, the destruction of the dollar, and so on and so forth. And it's not like Powell really needed to do this. I mean, to further emphasize what, in the media anyway, was already being described that way far and wide. You know, go to slide three. We'll start there. Ever since mid-March, all we've heard about, especially in the financial press, is this awesome and terrible money printing. But with the mainstream already on his side, Powell's 60 Minutes interview was already a bit peculiar. The timing as well as what he said during it raised a ton of red flags.
Jeff, when you say red flags, I take it that you don't mean warnings about a repeat of Weimar Germany. That was the common takeaway, or at least the idea of excessive money printing leading to some kind of inflationary or even hyperinflationary result.
Yeah, exactly. And that was Powell's whole point, too. That was the implication he very purposefully left for you to draw. I mean, from Volcker to Greenspan to Bernanke to Yellen, they were always very careful in what they said in public. Fed speak, as it came to be known, had always meant that the Fed chair would never be so direct, ever. Nothing more than, you know, subtle hints or allegations. Yet here we had the current occupant of the top central bank job openly declaring his money printing flood. Now you have to ask yourself, why? Why the sudden desire to be so direct about it? And it wasn't just that one line either. In fact, on that particular Sunday, Jay Powell absolutely lied his ass off. Very blatant and obvious falsehoods. So again, why and why now?
It's one thing to say, as you usually do, that these central bankers don't know their job and don't know what they're doing. But to come out and claim that the Federal Reserve chairman has gone on arguably the most famous news program and repeatedly misled viewers is a whole new level of allegation, even from you, Jeff.
Yeah, and exactly, which is my whole point. Let's go to slide four and run right through them. To begin with, when Scott Pelley of 60 Minutes asked Jay Powell when exactly did this light switch go on for him, you know, the so-called crisis light switch, Powell said, oh no, there was no light switch, no single aha moment. We saw it coming. That's what the Federal Reserve chairman actually said. We saw it coming. And it's so obviously untrue. Everyone and anyone who was paying attention during March knows this. If the FOMC saw it coming, then why weren't all those emergency programs up and running by late February? Unlimited QE teed up and ready to go by March 1st. The primary dealer credit facility with its eligibility list already crafted in hand long before that last rate cut. None of that happened because they had no idea what was coming. Instead, it was a series of haphazard reactive responses. When they finally got around to announcing QE on that, you know, that dramatic Sunday night announcement and performance, you know, the very next day on March 15th, The stock market responded with its biggest single-day rout since 1987. But here's the thing. Not every American was paying close attention to all this. You and I were, Eric, you know, as was every single one of our listeners. But the vast majority of the public wasn't. What the public saw and heard was, oh, the stock market's tanking and the Federal Reserve is bailing it out. The stock market stopped tanking, so it must have worked. We saw it coming was Jay Powell's way of putting an official stamp on what is really collective gaslighting.
So in other words, they were just trying to further feed the narrative that the Fed's money printing, or whatever the Fed does, is effective.
Yeah, no question. You know, the Federal Reserve, we're constantly told, is staffed with the best and the brightest. So don't worry about, you know, don't worry a thing going forward, Mr. and Mrs. John Q. Public. We saw it coming, and then we handled it effectively. And that's the narrative which you see behind Powell's other big lies, too. He says the Fed flooded the world with money, that they actually increased the money supply. He knows that's false because the Fed hasn't defined money or used money supply figures in any meaningful way since the 1970s. I mean, why else throw in that line that I've highlighted here on slide 4 at the end of his second big lie? He intentionally adds that the Fed prints physical currency, which is technically true, played no role whatsoever in anything they did in March or since March. He's being very crafty by throwing this out there so that you actually equate the latter part about currency with the Fed's activities and bank reserves. He very much wants you to think of all of these things as being in the same monetary and money printing bucket when they are not.
And then Powell said that the Fed still has a lot more ammunition, which is still true though, right?
Yeah, technically true, but it's still a lie of omission. What Powell was trying to say was that he hasn't exhausted his toolkit. There's still a bunch more things he can do, more assets or asset classes to buy, etc. But these things aren't actually different things. It's all the same thing. It's all about raising the level of inert, mostly useless bank reserves. In other words, everything Powell did in the 60 Minutes interview was to further craft this mystique, this legend about the Fed's so-called money printing. And so, again, I have to ask, you know, why and why now? Why does this guy obviously believe he has to go on 60 Minutes and actually sell his money printing flood to the general public? Powell knows his audience very well, if you go to slide 5, particularly the financial media and the financial services industry. He knew they'd lap up his statement about create money digitally, which they did, and they'd never, ever call him on what these outright brazen lies. So it's a combination. Everyone can see that the Fed's balance sheet has exploded. The level of bank reserves is up by almost $1.7 trillion in less than 3 months' time. It's definitely the biggest, most aggressive policy effort in the central bank's history. And you can see it. And now Powell's stamping his preferred interpretation of it on the public discourse. Again, if this is actual money printing, why the full court press to sell it? And why now? Why the latter half of May after more than 2 months of doing it?
Jeff, this is almost a rhetorical question at this point, especially for our listeners who are familiar with your work and have listened to the last time that you were here on the program. Not everyone is buying this money printing concept. In fact, the whole global bond market seems to be rejecting it. What's going on here?
Yeah, you know, another month further down the road than we were last time we were together, and still not an inflationary peep out of the bond market, as you can see on slide 7. The financial media has gone wild with the printing a constant stream of stories about money printing, but there's absolutely none of it anywhere in bonds. I mean, not even a hint. Inflation expectations remain near their lows at deflationary low levels they've rarely ever been during the entire 21st century. If you see on slide 8 for that history, they're sticking close to the crisis, the deflation side, no matter how much or how far or how fast the Fed's visible rise in bank reserves achieves. So what you see goes way up, the way Powell likes it, but it's what you don't see that banks in the bond market must be doing. That's what ultimately matters here. And it's not just inflation expectations and tips. The yield curve, as well as other related money curves, are actually agreeing about this. This ain't money printing. It doesn't matter what Jay Powell calls it or how he's trying to lead you into interpreting it in that very specific way. The bond market knows the difference when it comes to effective money. If you see on slide 9, Powell says, you know, nothing coming, going all the way back to the end of 2018 now, when the Treasury rally showed that he was in over his head way back then. You know, talking about the rate hikes and inflation back when bonds correctly predicted and declared rate cuts and downturn over the last couple of years. And all that was before we ever got to COVID-19. So when you compare the yield curve, where it is now after all this so-called money printing, to what a normalish yield curve is supposed to look like, as you can see on slide 10, which is nothing like what you see today, you start to understand just how little the Fed matters in the real economy outside of the media. The yield curve isn't any, it's not even a curve anymore. It's been squashed flat almost to nothing. Therefore, as so nominally flat as it is, it represents a huge warning about the state of the world, both the short and long run. It's a deflationary warning. No growth, no inflation, no money printing.
Well, Jeff, we're also seeing this outside of the bond market, aren't we? I mean, one of the things that got my attention was how big companies, multinationals, big major corporations seem to be drawing down every last credit line that they can find.
Everything they could get their hands on. I mean, they did that during the crisis when the credit markets, including commercial paper again, importantly, basically stopped functioning, which is, you know, another black mark against the Fed. But more importantly, companies have kept it up both in April and through May, even though Jay Powell says he's flooded the world with dollars. You know, these companies' chairmen and their C-suite leaders might say on TV that they believe Powell, but they sure aren't acting that way in practice. You know, commercial industrial loans have absolutely skyrocketed since the beginning of March. The total outstanding, according to the Federal Reserve's numbers, it's up by almost 30%, as you can see on slides 11 and 12. This is simply unprecedented level of borrowing. But again, you know, there's more to this than meets the eye. Just like increasing the level of bank reserve doesn't mean anything if banks don't actually lend that money into the real economy, multinationals drawing on credit lines doesn't mean anything if they are just building up a much-needed liquidity cushion. So businesses aren't taking on these loans anticipating a money-printing, low-rate-inspired inflationary building boom. That's not what's going on here. This is a 1930s-style deflationary liquidity hoarding. Even J.P. Morgan's chairman, Jamie Dimon, as you can see in slide 13, you know, is trying to build up his bank's role in the March crisis, but he had to first basically admit that it's really that bad out there in the corporate environment.
Well, it doesn't speak too highly of this supposed flood of liquidity if companies are hoarding cash and seeking to build up these enormous liquidity cushions. If they're doing that, then what else are they doing that might be deflationary as opposed to inflationary in nature?
Well, we know just what that is. I mean, they're taking their axe to their cost structure too, which means largely labor. In preservation mode, survival means cutting down to the bare bone and then going one step further. You know, initial jobless claims continue to rise by more than 2 million in a single week, as I show you on slide 14. Again, this is unprecedented stuff, simply unprecedented. And we're talking about the end of May now. Now, continuing claims actually declined in the latest figures as the economy has begun to reopen and some people are starting to get back to work. But initial claims show that the layoffs and labor cuts are still huge, massive, and they're running very deep. It took a year and a half for cumulative jobless claims to reach 40 million during the Great Recession and its immediate aftermath. And we saw that just happen in a span of 10 weeks. 10 weeks! And it's still happening at the end of May, even though there's been, presumably, all this money printing. Now, COVID-19 is the underlying shock, but it doesn't explain all of these things and not nearly the level of all of these things.
It does start to answer your question about Jay Powell and why he's out there essentially selling money printing or digital creation of money, if he prefers to call it that way, and why he's doing it now.
Yeah, Jay Powell's job, as he sees it, is to convince the American public, from corporate managers to consumers, that as bad as all this is, that's the worst of it. It only gets better from here. And the reason it's only going to get better is what he wants you to think of this money printing inflationary takeoff, the Fed taking over the markets, as some have said. He's got to get everyone to believe there's no more downside. There are no more risks. And the reason he's got to sell it so hard is because there are tremendous risks and there is an enormous downside. That was the part about his 60 Minutes interview that was actually truthful. And it was the one little nugget everyone simply missed or glossed over in favor of that create money digitally bit that he came up with. What he said was, the worst is over. What that means, if everything goes smoothly and perfectly, everyone believes in this money printing fairy tale, that by the end of next year, not this year, next year, we might be back to where we were when this thing got started.
Okay, wait a minute. I don't think the end of next year is what everyone has in mind, at least those who are optimistically calling for a V-shaped recovery. And if you look at the stock market, you know, the indications are that everything is fine. So next year?
Yeah, if you're left with the impression that the Fed has flooded the world with dollars and dollar liquidity, that they saw all this coming and they were perfectly prepared for it, and they've handled everything superbly with their powerful digital money creation printing press, then you're going to be less worried about these pesky little details. Now, Jay Powell and his econometric models know we're in big trouble. That's why he's going through with this disgraceful, it's really a disgraceful charade. The most optimistic group of optimists only hope, they don't expect, they only hope we're back close to even by the end of next year. Now, another member of this, optimist club, as I call them, is the Congressional Budget Office. And they use basically the same econometric models as the Fed does to forecast the economic future, as you can see on slide 16. And the reason I put them in this optimist category is that, like the Fed and the financial media, the CBO looks at all this money printing as a huge help. They even call it a flood. They calculate that the federal government's massive spending program, that will lift the economy too. So they've encoded in their projections, the one I'm showing you here, that all this government spending and all the central bank asset buying is actually, they're predicting it's going to be powerful stimulus. And yet, despite it, they have some terrible, terrible news for the American public. According to these models, remember, these optimistic, stimulus-loving models, they think that by the end of 2021, the end of next year, the unemployment rate will be somewhere around 8.5%. Real GDP will be about 1.5% lower than it was at the end of 2019. And most importantly, the employment-to-population ratio will be a disastrous 5% less at the end of next year. So let me put this as bluntly as I can. The optimistic case that both the CBOE and Jay Powell are putting out is one which leaves the U.S. economy significantly worse off than the Great Recession did. And that's if stimulus actually works, which history shows it doesn't. There really is no money printing, as the bond market's telling us. So when you see these best case numbers and estimates, now it makes perfect sense why Jay Powell went on 60 Minutes and lied his ass off. He knew he had to do a much better job of selling money, which wouldn't actually be necessary because actual money sells itself. So, if you're distracted by Jay Powell's create money digitally statement, especially if you're too impressed by it to actually think any more about it, then maybe you just won't notice how much trouble we are actually in, and how much trouble we're actually in large part because the Fed isn't what everyone has been led to believe it is.
Okay, Jeff, I want to push back a little bit now because, first of all, I couldn't possibly agree more with you in my heart. Deep down inside, that's how I feel too. But let's look at the market facts here. You and I have both felt that the Fed's actions have been, I would go so far as to say, reckless and irresponsible. I don't want to put those words in your mouth, although I suspect you agree. But here's the thing. We've just come through a weekend. First of all, we've got a pandemic crisis on our hands. It looks very likely that there's going to be a breakdown in relations between United States and China. And U.S.-China relations were, of course, what the stock market was teetering on throughout that whole negotiation of the trade deal. Now we've got, riots breaking out across the United States. Appears as though there's reason to think that this was planned, that there was some kind of concerted effort to simultaneously begin all of this civil unrest across the nation this weekend. Stock market is up on the news. Help me reconcile this because, you and I can scream at the top of our lungs that it doesn't make sense or it's irrational or whatever. But the fact remains that although you and I criticize the Fed and their actions, one thing seems clear, which is their ability to pump up asset markets hasn't really failed yet.
No, and that's true. And I've said that repeatedly, too. The Fed, when it does this monetary policy smoke and mirrors, as I call it, the puppet show is what I really call it, its audience isn't really the general public. The Fed isn't doing all this, QE and bond buying for, the guy on the street. Because the guy in the street really doesn't care that much about it. The Fed is doing its dance, doing this elaborate performance art, all for the benefit of the financial services industry. It is signaling to fund managers and people who have gone through mainstream economic school and have been steeped in mainstream economic orthodox thought, that have been taught to believe in the Greenspan put, and the Fed is the most powerful, awesome, effective technocratic instrument that has ever been created in human history. That's what Jay Powell, that's who he's talking to. That's what he went on 60 Minutes to lie about. He went on 60 Minutes to lie to the fund managers and financial service industry so that they, on Monday morning, they hit the buy button. That's all it is. It's so that people managing money will be comforted by the fact that Jay Powell seems like he's in control. Therefore, I can tell all my clients on the phone, that, oh, don't worry. The Fed's got my back. I don't have to worry about my clients getting angry about why am I buying stocks at this juncture, because I can say to them, I have a way to rationalize this buying behavior. I can say, look, Jay Powell told me everything's fine. Why should I not believe the guy? That's what's going on here. The Fed's specific audience is the financial services industry, and it knows its audience very, very well.
So is there a breakdown that happens at some point? Is there a moment where the people of the country insist that if there's going to be digital creation of money, not to be confused with money printing, that it needs to go to Main Street, not Wall Street? And at that point, it kind of breaks the back of the stock market?
Well, you know, it's how do we get from here to there? I mean, what is the act or the level of crisis, if you want to put it that way, which causes Main Street to recognize that there's a monetary imbalance that needs to be rectified? I think that's the biggest problem right now. And it's been the biggest problem since 2007. You know, they got away with the first financial crisis because they blamed it on subprime mortgages, which people could understand. When you said, oh, a bunch of reckless banks lending money to people who didn't need to buy houses for that they couldn't afford, people on the street could understand that. When you say global dollar shortage, you know, people don't understand what the hell you're talking about. And so it's hard for the regular person, the regular folks to connect what's going on actually in the financial system and the monetary system with the results they see around them. So there has to be some kind of a way that people can actually see one for the other, that we need to do something about the monetary system because it's causing all, or it's pressuring all of these things that we're now seeing, geez, almost regularly in our daily lives. And that's really the hard part, is how do we get from, how is the Fed actually affecting the stock market? What does the Fed actually do? And why is that actually harmful? And it's not inflationary. It's not money printing.
Jeff, I can't thank you enough for another All-Stars appearance. For people who are not familiar with it, you and our good friend Emil Kalinowski have begun producing another, I don't know if it's a podcast or a video series. Tell us about it. What is it? Where can people find it?
Well, they can find it on our YouTube channel at Alhambra Investments, or on our regular website, which is alhambrapartners.com. And it's basically a weekly video discussion where we talk about, you know, some of the major elements and points of things going on in the economy, in the markets, in the dollar system, of course. And we've published it under the Eurodollar University banner, which is something Eric, you and I started a long time ago, to try to do exactly what we were just talking about, to get people talking about and thinking about how do we connect what's really going on in the monetary system with what's actually what we see in our daily lives and in the economy and all these other imbalances around the world. You know, why is there a move toward digital currency? Again, as you pointed out, not digital money creation in the Fed's hand, but why are people infatuated with the potential for cryptocurrency, for example? You know, all of these things are happening for reasons, and we're trying to connect all these dots so that people can understand, you know, from A to B, what's really going on out there.
This episode of Macro Voices All-Stars was made possible by TopTradersUnplugged.com, the leading podcast on quant and rules-based investing. Be sure to claim your free copy of their recently updated guide to the best investing books ever written at TopTradersUnplugged.com/macro guide. And if you haven't heard it yet, be sure to check out my full-length interview with Niels Kastrup Larsen on trend following strategies, which is linked in your Research Roundup email. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly Research Roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.